The topic at hand is evaluating your training program and undertraining, overtraining. How do you tell?
And that is a real challenge. Let me just first say that I think that the initial, probably the initial part of the discussion should be on goal setting. The reason I say that is that I think that you're fairly, you and I have talked enough that you know that my feeling is that in America we endurance ride. In the rest of the world they endurance race, and yet we want to compete with the world with the notion that we're endurance riders and that to finish is to win. All other places in the world to come across the line first is to win, and they all make efforts at judging best condition, and everybody knows that it's the booby prize. And so around the world, that's the way it is. And in the Middle East, that's the way it is. And in South Africa, that's the way it is. In Europe, that's the way it is. And so those are the places that I have been specifically where FEI is the predominant set of rules that are followed, and people seek to win. Now, I'm not saying that when we go to a world competition that we're not interested in a bronze medal, but I'm just telling you that that to finish is to win will not garner very many medals. And so if we're going to look at competition on the international scene, and if this discussion is to be geared toward that, then we'll have one series of discussions. If we are talking about how to best condition our horses to win or to compete on the continent, then that's a different situation. And so
we probably have let's just say the gamut on the call.
Yeah, and that's okay. I'm comfortable about either one, but I think that those who have not ridden internationally that may be on the call should appreciate that our philosophy is different than many others. And that's not to say that all of Europe and all of the UAE and all of South Africa compete only to come across the line first, because that's not true. But the people that are in the World Equestrian Games are going to win the gold medal. And so that's a little different approach than, to being able to compete in and complete the Tevis or complete Vermont or complete the Old Dominion. Yeah. Those goals are lofty, and those of us that have had the pleasure of either judging or competing in those recognize just how tough that is and what a goal that is, but it's different than trying to get across the line first.
Right.
So, at any rate, now then, I will begin to address the questions that you sent on the email, and then I think that everybody should feel comfortable to stop me at any time and ask questions. I'm quite comfortable about that.
Right.
One of the things that we're going to get to, and I unfortunately have a book, and it has escaped me. So somebody that has the ability to be online here that can do a search on Amazon, if you put in something like swimming training and lactic acid or lactate, you will find the name of probably two or three, maybe four books, but there's one particular one, and I may recognize the name if somebody's able to recite it for me. But at any rate, that will be useful later on.
Dwight?
Yes.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find that. I think you're making an absolutely great point, which you have to start with goals. Let me add, just to complicate things further, because you talked about the difference between, you know, completing and getting your Tevis buckle in Old Dominion, but I think there's another dimension that I'd be interested in your comments on as we go through, and that is peaking for that one world event versus having a horse that does well over 10 or 20 years and whether those are mutually exclusive or not. You may still want to compete at a high level in the U.S., but there's
also... that's a really, really good point, because that is going... That's something that there are people that are going to want to go to the WEG example. May not be only the WEG, but going to want to go to the WEG in Lexington, and are going to want to set their horse up for that. And there are some things that we do differently and should be doing differently to prepare a horse for an event like that. And whenever you think it's appropriate, I'm happy to talk about that. Should I deal with questions that were presented first?
Yeah, if you don't mind, let's sort of go through the questions as they were presented, and we'll try to make sure we get to all of them. And let me, the first one, you know, how do you tell when a horse is in risk of being overtrained or has been overtrained? And I'm going to holler at Stag in the meantime. Hang on.
Okay. Has been overtrained is probably an easier thing to address than is overtrained. And has overtrained is the horse that is probably a little off of his feed, and he's just as fit as a fiddle, may even be a little bit on the thin side, and maybe doesn't feel just quite right to you. Those are the ways, and listen, there are no scientific ways that we have available to us now that will tell us that. And here's the reason. If we jump down to item number six, question number six, about what did I find out in the UAE, what I found out in the UAE was that we did blood work on horses weekly for 2 or 3 years, and we were not able to predict from their blood when they were going to have a catastrophic injury. And I don't mean catastrophic as in, you know, break their neck or break a leg. I meant when they were going to have a breakdown as in a tendon, a suspensory, a joint, that sort of thing. We were not able to predict that with blood work. So the systems of blood work that are available to us at the moment are not able to predict that. So how do we know, how do you know that the horse has been overtrained? Well, you as riders, and I like not to rely on you as riders because you have so many biases. But having said that, you as riders are the very best tool that a veterinarian has to be able to identify a horse not doing right. Now, many, many times you will go to your veterinarian and say, this horse doesn't feel right to me, and the veterinarian will trot the horse out and say, well, I can't see anything, and he is being honest. He cannot see anything. You can feel it far, far sooner than even the trained eye can see it. And so I rely heavily on riders to tell me what's going on. Now, in that regard, you have to become a little bit better educated, maybe not better. You know, you guys may be just perfectly educated. But you have to be educated a little bit in dressage techniques to be able to identify which leg it is that may be off so that you can direct the veterinarian. And the reason that that's important is that when you first begin to feel that the horse is off, that's when it is repairable. By the time most riders call a veterinarian, the horse is already broken. And that's an unfortunate thing, and then that's going to require a longer period of time. Doesn't mean it can't heal. Just means it's likely to require a longer period of time or more active involvement on the part of the veterinarian to heal it. Now, you guys with physical therapy things that you do, ice, controlled exercise, massage, chiropractic, acupuncture, that sort of thing, you all have quite a bit of impact on the healing the horse, because that kind of regular attention is far far more beneficial than a single shot of Adequan that I give the horse, or a single shot of Legend that I give the horse. So it's real important, the physical therapy things that you do, in terms of being able to rehab them. But let me get back to the question. finalize my answer about how do you tell when the horse is at risk or in risk of being overtrained. That's probably more a function of your program than it is the horse. And we're going to address some issues that have to do with is it a numbers game or is it a matter of being able to choose the right athlete. We'll talk about that a little later when we get to that question. But at the current state of affairs, I don't have a way of telling you when your horse is at risk of being overtrained. But when you have a goal in mind, and it's a lofty goal, and you're pressed for time, or you have a delay, you know, mother-in-law breaks her neck and you have to go take time out of training to go take care of her, or, you know, any number of different things that interrupt your training program, if you go back and train faster and or harder than what your original plan was, then your horse may be at risk of being overtrained in the short run. In the long run, the horse will only be overtrained if it is overridden, and you guys probably know that better than I do. So,
now say that again. Your horse will only be able to be trained or overtrained?
Overtrained.
If it is overridden, okay.
Yeah, if he's overridden. And when I say overridden, I don't mean on a single event. I mean overridden as in trained too hard without an appropriate amount of rest. And when we get to the question that Stag asked about how do we set up a horse for a big event, then we're going to talk about adequate rest. And adequate rest is incredibly important. And it's something that we're all afraid of giving because we're worried that they're going to lose too much condition while they're resting. But when we talk about how you train a horse, I mean, what you have to do in order to get a horse to train up to a higher level, we will discuss the issue of rest and why it's so important. So, sorry that I didn't have a better answer for you on the risk of being overtrained or being overtrained, but that's something that you guys as riders will have to be able to that's your gut feeling more than it is my evaluation.
Dwight?
Yes.
You talked about, you know, using dressage to sort of tell you. I'm trying to sort of translate that into, so what would it show up? I mean, one, you may, obviously, if you feel the unevenness, but is it going to even be more subtle, like slight, you know, the horse is showing resistance to one direction versus the other? Would you expect
those are,
to really
those are the other indications that he is having? And there's two sides to this coin. One is overtrained, but overtrained means that we've overworked a particular structure, perhaps, and that then is where the pain is coming from. The pain is coming before the horse actually breaks, and his resistance or his change in motion, the change in his feel under you is the clue that you have that something's not right. When I talked about dressage training, I'm not suggesting that you all stop what you're doing and go take up through third level dressage. But what they teach you in dressage is to feel each individual limb as it moves. And I can't do this, but Anita can ride a horse, and she can tell me left hind, right front, left front, as they move, and she knows exactly which one. She feels that. And so that would be your goal, not necessarily immediate goal, but that would be the goal, is that you would get to where you knew your horse well enough and you felt your horse well enough that you could say to me, he doesn't feel right on his right front. Now, I can't tell you how many people tell me, well, he's off in his right front, when in fact he's limping on his left front, or he's limping on his right hind rather than his right front. And so that's a matter of experience and time, and I'm not suggesting that you guys want to want to quit endurance riding to learn how to do dressage or to learn how to do lameness evaluation. But what I am saying is that when you feel that the horse is not right, then you need to count. Then that's when you need to kind of turn on your thinking cap and say, now just exactly where do I think this horse feels different? And if it is, you know, turning to the right, now many times we'll see that a horse will turn very well to the left and does not want to turn to the right. Why? Well, that can be because he's sore in a suspensory on the right front, or I mean a left front, and he doesn't want to push off of the left front as he turns to the right. Or it could be that he is sore in a right hock, and he doesn't want to bring that leg up underneath him as he turns to the right. And on occasion, it can be the left hock, because as he's turning, he's actually pushing hardest, taking the longest stride with the left hind as he's turning to the right, and so it may be painful for him to take a long stretch stride with that, to push on it for a longer time. So that's what I'm saying, is that those are just the kinds of things that should be a goal for you when you start feeling that your horse is off, rather than jump off of him and get on the phone to the vet. Try and spend a little time with him to be able to identify as best you can what the symptoms are. You don't have to decide that it's the left hind or the right hind, but be sure that you get a good set of symptoms down so that when you do talk to someone, that you can tell them, this is what he's doing. That kind of thing helps me a lot, an awful lot, in determining where lameness is.